Let's call to order the House Committee on Land Use for Tuesday, April 21st, 2009. I want to open a work session on House Bill 2573 for the purpose of carrying that item over to Thursday. House Bill 2573 carried over to Thursday's agenda.
Okay.
Now I want to open a work session on House Bill 2879 for the purpose of carrying that over to Thursday's agenda. Still waiting on bits of paper to be able to move that bill. House Bill 2879 carried over to Thursday's agenda. Now, let's open a work session on House Bill 3100. We've heard hearings on this bill. We've had work sessions on this bill. This bill has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Rules, and that is my intention today, is to move the bill to Rules. So I'm not planning on taking public testimony on this bill. The bill will not go to the House floor from this committee. If it goes to the House floor, that will be a referral from the Committee on Rules. However, there is at least one amendment that I'd like to consider for this bill. And would like to ask Mr. Whitman to come forward to explain the Dash 7 amendment, please.
Just in case, yeah.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, the Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. So the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 3100 do a couple of things to that bill. And I have to apologize, we have a number of bills this afternoon.
We do.
I am juggling like the rest of you. So the amendments to 3100 make a couple of technical changes in 3100 to clarify what the area is that is proposed for designation as an area of critical concern. So you see the specific reference in the Dash 7 amendments to Area 1 and Area 2 in the management plan. And then the remainder of the bill incorporates the existing development standards for amendments to the management plan. That's in subsection 4 of section 2 of the bill. And then the other change to note for the committee is in subsection 6 of the bill, the definition of contiguous is provided there. That's new also, and it specifically provides that contiguous as used in the management plan, and this is the section of the management plan referring to the development authorization for what's commonly known as the Ponderosa property. And so it is clarifying that provision of the management plan to make sure everyone understands that it means that the development may occur on up to 25 clusters connected only by a road system. So, Madam Chair, those are the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 3100. I'd be happy to answer any questions that there may be.
Let's put that amendment in play first, and then Representative Garrett.
Madam Chair, I move we adopt the Dash 7 amendments dated April 21, 2009.
Thank you. Representative Garrett moves to adopt the Dash 7 amendment to House Bill 3100, amendments dated today. Now, discussion on that motion or any questions of Mr. Whitman?
We're still trying to find it.
Representative Wingard, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we last met on this bill, we ran out of time, and you informed me that I would have a chance to question Mr. Whitman about the testimony that we had last time.
Okay.
So I do have some questions. To some degree, they're related to the Dash 7s. Sir, does the adoption of these amendments entertain this idea that LCDC put forward on the two resorts getting 120 and 25 variously? Would that be allowed under the Dash 7 amendments?
Madam Chair, Representative Wingard, yes. This would approve the Dash 7 amendments would approve the management plan as recommended to the Legislative Assembly by LCDC. That management plan includes an authorization for what's commonly known as the Ponderosa property of up to 100 units and then 20 units of overnight. That's the 120. And then for what's commonly known as the Matolian property, there's an authorization in the management plan for 25 residential units and 10 overnight.
Thank you.
Follow up. I'm wondering what the real economic value of this is to Jefferson County. Their unemployment rate was recently posted at 18.9%, and they have 25% of their county residents receiving food stamps. At the levels of housing that you are articulating would be possible, what will this give the county as far as economic development outside of perhaps just some subdivisions in the wilderness?
Madam Chair, Representative Wingard, we have not done any analysis of the economic benefit to Jefferson County. We have worked with the property owners in defining this development authorization to make sure that it is something that works for them.
Follow up?
Representative Gibson.
The Matolian project has said that they aren't using groundwater. So isn't the issue of groundwater consumption moot in the discussion? Their testimony is that they plan to use 0.06% of the average annual impact to the river's flow. Is that accurate? And doesn't that part, element of the Matolian Eco Resort proposal essentially render the water issue moot?
Madam Chair, Representative Wingard, it is correct that at least as currently configured, the Matolian proposal, and no application has been filed either, to my knowledge, either for a land use application or for a water right application. But the materials that they've provided publicly describe a water system that uses surface water rather than groundwater and would appropriate surface water during the winter months. In order to do that, they will need to file a water right application with the Department of Water Resources, and there'll need to be a determination made by the Water Resources Department as to whether that would be approved or not. You're correct. It is a different issue than the groundwater issue.
Another question, Madam Chair?
Sure, Representative, a few more, but this bill's not going to the floor from this committee, so a few more questions.
However, it is going to a committee I don't sit on, so I won't get a chance to ask these questions again. I appreciate the indulgence.
Until it comes to the floor.
Have you reviewed the Matolian's testimony about water mitigation? In your plan on page 22, you say that you believe the Matolian River is already at the state limit for cumulative impacts. Do you believe that to be a true statement?
Madam Chair, Representative Wingard, that's true as to cumulative impacts allowed under the Oregon Water Code for additional groundwater appropriation. As you pointed out, at least as currently configured, Matolian is proposing a surface water appropriation.
A couple more questions?
Thank you.
Anyone else? Questions of the witness or discussion of the motion?
Representative Klein. Thank you. Director Whitman, I was just I think catching the amendment correctly and seeing that instead of using the term area of critical concern on each of the three tests for any new development, it uses the term Atolius River Basin, and then that's defined up above to include areas 1 and 2. Is that how that works?
Madam Chair, Representative Clem, that's correct.
Thanks.
Any other discussion on the motion to adopt the Dash 7 amendment? Any objections?
Yes.
Representative Wingart? Representative Wingart. Motion carries. Before we take a motion to move the bill, I want to put on the record that the committee has received written testimony for our record without public oral testimony from the following individuals and group: Dr. Brad Cockman, John Hornbeck, the Association of Oregon Counties, Robert McClellan, Jennifer Clark, Elliot Michael, Mike Myatt, Ruth Lovegren, Susan Bragdon, Jim Keen, Dr. John Metcalf, and Stephen Hemska. Those will all be added to our record on this bill.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I would move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3100.
Representative Wingart moves the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 3100. Can you give us a 30-second summary of the Dash 3? Do we have that with us?
The very brief summary would be that it substitutes for LCDC's plan, Jefferson County's plan, which the committee has been given in detail. I do have some one-page information breaking down exactly what that plan does for the area, but it is the Jefferson County Commission's alternative proposal for designating the area.
And I'm sorry, Representative, the number, but that was the Dash...
I believe it to be the Dash 3 amendment.
Dash 3.
Okay. Have
we
have
those?
Yeah, I think that's the...
I don't have the Dash 5. We're looking.
No, the Dash 5
dash
is mine.
3. I did give them to the committee administrator.
I think he needs Dash
4.
4,
5, and 6.
The ones with Bush Park and Markham Park and all that stuff.
It's just the wrong Dash 5.
Dash 3.
I have Dash 4, Dash 5, and Dash 6.
I'm happy to give over my copy. I did distribute. I mean, I did give them to the committee administrator.
Okay.
I don't know what Dash 3s are.
You have 20, do you have 25 copies?
I don't. On me, not 25. I had my staff deliver about an hour ago. At the same time I delivered the other ones, the Dash 4s. It might have been an error on our part.
Or it might be in committee services. There are a lot of amendments coming in. But
every other committee is slammed the way we are.
I understand. So... I can certainly make this available for copying.
That's all we have.
It's not a very long one. I mean, you do have, the committee has been given information from the county about their alternative proposal. This essentially is language adopting that.
Just out of curiosity, is anyone planning on moving any other amendment to this bill?
I am.
Okay, why don't we take, can you withdraw this motion and we'll come back to it while that gets copied?
Sure.
Okay.
I withdraw my motion.
Okay. Representative Wingart.
I would move the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3100.
And that we do have, I think, at the dais.
I have it, too.
Representative Wingart moves the Dash 4 amendment to House Bill 3100. Representative, 30-second summary.
Yes, ma'am. This is a very environmentally friendly and conscious Dash 4 amendment addition to 3100. We have found the area of critical concern statute, and I believe that it is important that those who would support it for Jefferson County also enjoy the benefits of an area of critical concern designation within their own house districts. So my bill, or my amendment here, seeks to start the process of an area of critical concern designation, and all it would really do is ask LCDC to review the following five areas for potential areas of critical concern, including Markham Nature Park up in the Portland area, Oswego Lake,
obviously in Lake Oswego. Bush Pasture Park, located right here in the beautiful city of Salem. Siletz Bay on the coast. And Forest Park, also located up in the Portland area near Multnomah County. I would think that these areas are considered precious and valuable to all of us, and that we would want to move forward as quickly as possible to save these unique treasures that exist within the boundaries of Oregon.
Okay. Discussion on the motion.
Just a question.
Representative Klein.
Is this in addition to the area of critical concern? These are additional sites or in lieu of?
Correct, Representative Klein. This would not be a gut and stuff. These would be in addition to the area of critical concern for the Metolius Basin. But again, these don't actually designate them. They simply instruct LCDC to begin the process of reviewing them.
Do we have a fiscal on these amendments?
No, we don't, but a fiscal is not required for referral to rules. Any other discussion?
Sure. I'd like to speak to it. I don't actually have any problem studying Bush's Pasture Park. It is a treasure to this community. It's been already gifted to the community with permanent conservation easements on it, so I don't know. The study would probably come back, except for the one piece of it that was gifted to the School for the Blind and is on the verge of being closed and sold to developers, which this might actually really help.
Madam Chair, could we stand at ease, please?
Okay. We'll take about a 5-minute recess.
part of the cost is...
Call the committee back to order. There you are, Representative Wingart. Okay, we are entertaining the Dash 4 amendment to House Bill 3100. Further discussion on the motion to amend. Call the roll on the motion.
On the Dash 4s. Are we in a roll call right now?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I can't discuss it right now then, can I?
No.
Sorry,
you missed that opportunity. Sorry.
I'm going to follow the request I did on 3100 and ask the LCDC on my own to go do it. No.
What's that?
Was that a no?
The motion is on Dash 4, is that correct?
I think that was a sneaky discussion under guise of vote.
Madam Chair, was that a no?
That was a no.
Okay.
No.
Representative Wingart? Yes. Representative Winter? Yes. Vice Chair Garrett? No. Vice Chair Osborne? Excused? No. Motion fails.
Madam Chair?
Representative Wingart.
I would move, now that everyone has them, the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3100.
S3. Representative Wingart moves the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 3100.
Madam Chair, if you did want a very brief summary, I'm sure someone from Jefferson County could come up and very briefly describe what it does. Your call.
Representative, I would prefer that you describe the amendment.
Okay. The county's protection plan is a 6-mile wide, 3 miles from both sides of the river, from the river's wet headwaters to where it empties into Lake Billy Chinook. It's approximately 28.6 miles. This 6-mile protection zone is 12 times greater than the protection required under the National Wild and Scenic River Act. And then, I mean, for brevity's sake, there are a whole series of things that are prohibited or managed within the area as a result of that. And the committee members have had the county's plan for some time.
Yes. And we got another copy today, just as a happy coincidence. Discussion on the motion on the Dash 3 amendment. Representative Clem.
The Dash 3 rejects the recommendation of the LCDC, the unanimous recommendation of the LCDC. And after attending their final meeting in Madras for several hours and listening to their first meeting and hearing nearly 1,000 Oregonians between October 15th and today talk about this issue, I feel very strongly about their recommendation and can support rejecting it.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I might just say that it's my understanding there was a recent meeting of the LCDC in which this issue of reconsideration came up, and that by one vote, that issue of reconsideration was defeated. Do I have that wrong? I'm happy to be corrected on that.
Representative Clark?
My understanding is a motion was made and then withdrawn by its maker without a vote.
Which at least gives the suggestion that there is no longer unanimity on LCDC about that.
Representative, you just made a motion, and actually, Madam Chair, I'll just be quiet.
Excellent idea. Any further discussion?
It's hard for us.
It is hard for us. It's not part of the training. Any further discussion? Would you call the roll on the motion to adopt the Dash 3 amendment?
No.
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 Aye.
Aye.
No.
Squivel is excused? No. Motion fails.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Hannah.
In a long line of opportunities for the committee today, I would like to suggest the dash 5 amendments be presented, please.
Representative Hannah, is that a motion?
That is a motion.
Okay. Representative Hannah moves that the committee adopt the dash 5 amendment to House Bill 3100. Representative Hannah, would you like to describe the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I believe copies have been handed out to at least everyone at the dais. The dash 5 amendment is an idea that I think progressed as this bill came forward in terms of management of the area of critical state concern. Within the dash 5 amendment is an establishment of the Metolius River Basin Commission, consisting of 7 members. The governor would appoint 3 members, including a member who represents the environmental community with special interest in fisheries, one from the environmental community with special interest in land use. One member is a representative of the Department of Environmental Quality. Jefferson County should appoint 3 members. One who is a landowner in the Metolius River Basin, one who is a holder of a permit relating to land within the Metolius River Basin, and one member who is a resident within the Metolius River Basin, and then that the tribe would appoint a representative from that body as well. The term of those memberships would be 4 years, and a description of the body of work to be completed is included, and I have had conversations with the tribe, and they are at present running those ideas past their governing body, but I believe it to be a good idea and one that would preserve the area with all those interested participating.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion on the dash 5 amendment?
Any question?
Representative Cowan, yes.
Thank you, and without time to review this, I'm somewhat interested. Section 4, it talks about the mission. It helped me to get my brain around this, I guess. Administer the management plan described in Section 1.3. What management plan is that?
It would be the area of critical state concern.
Okay.
That's the management plan adopted by the LCDC, which House Bill 3100, if passed, would accept.
Sorry, there's a number of management plans.
Yeah. Voting. Yeah. Fair point. Any other discussion? Representative Garrett.
Madam Chair, I actually like this idea and think it's very promising, but as a process matter, I'd like it to have the benefit of hearing before we were to actually work it into the bill. So I would be a no vote today, but encourage it to be heard at a later time.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm the one member on this committee who is on Ways and Means Subcommittee for things like natural resource commissions, and so I would like to understand the fiscal, but I actually think that this concept is quite strong. My only caveat is I'm not entirely sure that Jefferson County and the tribes aren't the only folks who need to be involved in this, and these other members that the governor appoints, we have quite a bit of representation, obviously, in land use laws from the state, and I'm not sure that we need the other 3. And what I'm committed to doing is, and I think, like my friend here, I'm nervous about the fact that I'm not on rules, and I know this eventually goes to rules, and so I'm committed in participating in other committees, primarily including my own, where I have a bill with a relating clause that we will, in a few days when we hear that bill, I'll have a fiscal on this and the alternative proposal for just Jefferson County and the tribe to be involved in governing the management plan, and we'll have a full hearing, and I'll make sure that Representative Hannah can come to that if this were to fail. I am not presuming an outcome. But I actually think this is quite a strong direction, and I wish I'd thought of it myself, but I didn't.
Representative.
Thank you. I'd just like to respond to one point Representative Clem made. There are of those mentioned, really only two members of government, one being Oregon government, that being the DEQ person who would be appointed by the governor, and the second would be the tribal member. So we have one state and one tribal member.
Okay. Any other discussion? I want to thank Representative Hanna for mentioning this idea to me this morning, although he didn't yet have language out of LC and wasn't sure he was going to get it. I also am intrigued by the idea, but think that we need to have full consideration of this idea before I'm prepared to move it into the bill. I am the only member of this committee that also serves on the Rules Committee and have told Representative Hanna that while I won't support this amendment today, I will actively engage in the conversation in the Rules Committee and encourage other members of that committee to look at this amendment and see if we can't find some way to make it work. Call the roll, please.
Representative Hanna?
No.
Representative Howard?
Yes.
No.
Aye.
Representative Hunter?
Yes.
Vice Chair Garrett?
No.
Excused? No. Motion fails. Anything else? Representative Garrett.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 3100 be sent to the committee
as
on as amended be sent to the committee on rules with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrett moves that House Bill 3100 as amended be sent to the committee on rules with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have set back and tried very hard to consider this whole process without being deeply involved in the ongoing debate, but I think, as everyone knows, I have been and continue to be very conflicted by this bill. And I really need to put on the record some of the reasons for my concerns. Probably the first and foremost is the public perception that's out and about and the resulting lobby effort that certainly has been directed at me via cards and letters and emails and telephone calls and calls at home and every other form of contact that one might imagine. And my problem with that is I think that the perception is very different from what the actual proposed ACSC would do, wrapped up in the concept of save the river versus the actual site map of where the proposed development was to be located, which is off of access off of a different highway, 4 miles from the river, has really very little to do with the actual river bank area. And I think that's unfortunate when public perception gets out ahead of actual fact of what we're talking about. I don't think that the design concept and the actual location of the Matullian project were adequately vetted through the process. I don't think that the developers were given due respect for what it was or is that they are trying to do. I also have a great deal of concern about the different maps that have been utilized by various parties. I think that that's confusing at best when we're all looking at a different set of maps as we go along. The wildlife protection requirements have not been very clearly defined and seem to be different standards being used in different parts of it. I think that the process has been disrespectful of the established land use process, which I do have a great deal of respect for, and also of the Jefferson County representation that was here and has been in other places, particularly during the public testimony. And I have said before, as we listen to public testimony that talks about county government officials being in the laps of the developers and only interested in what kind of money they can make, as a former county commissioner, I find that extremely offensive, and I don't think it's appropriate to these kinds of conversations. I continue to be very concerned about the general condition of the Riverside buffer area, the unincorporated settlement areas, what standards, what enforcement proceedings we're using to protect the river that I think is the goal of all of us. Certainly some of the unofficial campsites. I have a lot of interest in the county's management plan that was presented, and it was another area that we didn't talk about very much. So those are the things that I've been wrestling with over the last several weeks, and I don't support the methodology that came forward in some of the proposed amendments, and certainly the fact that I just saw them there. There was one I could support. There was another one that I actually considered fairly seriously. But we've had inadequate time to review those. I was encouraged by the commitment that I heard here from a number of folks to proceed and look at that. So I do think that this whole issue warrants further attention and review, and sadly the timing doesn't allow for that to happen in this committee. So it's with some concern. I am going to give my courtesy yes vote to move this forward and on to Rules Committee for further discussion, because I think that is important that we continue that conversation. But I do want it to be acknowledged that I'm not happy with the way this came to us.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Greenland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to comment on the bill. I think the bill is an important bill and moves things forward. I, as I mentioned in other contexts here, I've been interested in this part of the original statutes relating to Oregon land use bill, and I think the notion of an area of a special safe concern is important, and I've been lobbying to get a bill where Forest Park is included in that, and I was intrigued at the sort of random assignment of which districts here had parks named in the amendment. But I hope this does move forward to get VLCD to begin to look at how this this model can be used to deal with the complex planning problems that were true and that are true in dealing with the Metolius Basin, but are also true in several other important places throughout the state. And I hope this stimulates that model, and I'll keep arguing for at least one particular designation to be the second, if not the first.
Fair enough. Okay, call the roll, please. Motion to refer to rules.
Aye.
I'm sorry?
You said no one.
Cowan.
I'm sorry. Aye. Did I hear that?
Aye.
No.
No.
Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Excused? Aye. Motion carries. Thank you all for the discussion. Thank you all for your interest. I am going to close the work session on House Bill 3100. We have a pretty busy agenda, and I'm not sure we are going to get to every bill on the agenda. My intention is next to go quickly to House Bill 3313 for the sole purpose of moving that bill to the Rules Committee. And then to House Bill 2229, just so that you can manage your time. Open a work session on House Bill 3313, relating to land use. Representative Garrett?
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 3313 be moved to the House Committee on Rules.
Without
recommendation.
Representative Garrett moves that House Bill 3313 be referred to the Committee on Rules without recommendation. Representative Wingard, discussion on the motion.
I'm just, can you explain to me and the committee what the purpose of moving this to rules is?
The purpose is to give the Rules Committee some flexibility after the deadline for action on bills in Chamber of Origin. I don't have any particular idea in mind, but just some flexibility.
Madam Chair, is it interest in this bill or the relating clause that moves it to rule?
Representative Wingard, you are quite astute for a first-term member of the legislature. Further discussion? Any objections?
Yes. Mine is the objection. It's my
Representative bill. Hannah objects.
Oh, that's right.
Motion carries. Close the work session. Okay. Let's get open a work session on House Bill 2229, and the timing is excellent because now we do have the Dash 7 amendments to that bill. I would like to invite Director Whitman and three members of the Big Look Task Force who have had an opportunity to observe our committee process. But I'd like to invite them forward to thank them for the work that they did over the last 2.5-3 years to bring this report to us and to have them give us an opportunity to give us a grade on our handling of their product. The Dash 7 is being handed out right now. What you should have, I believe, do we have a hand engrossed? We have a hand engrossed version of the bill.
All right, this is the 7th.
Or don't we?
Pardon me, no, we have the 7th in front of us. Yeah.
Madam Chair, for the record, Richard Whitman, Department of Land Conservation and Development. I believe, Madam Chair, that you have what you have are the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2229, which replace the existing bill in its entirety. So, Madam Chair.
We essentially have the bill then, because this is a replacing the bill amendment.
That's correct, Madam Chair. And I am prepared, so you know, to go through and, depending on how much time you want to take on this, explain the changes that have come about in the Dash 7 amendments. But what I would suggest is that I give a very brief overview of the Dash 7 amendments and then turn it over to the members of the task force who are here to comment on their recommendations to the legislature and where we are in the process.
I think that's great. Committee members, I would like you to know it is not my intention to move this bill anywhere today. I wanted people to see the amendment, have some time to absorb it, have members of the public have a time to absorb it. And I hope, though, to move the bill somewhere, ideally to the floor, but we'll see. It currently has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but we may not need that on Thursday. So I would like to take a summary of what the amendment does, what the bill now would do, then give members of the task force an opportunity to comment, and then, time permitting, although we're in work session, I'd entertain some comments from people who have participated in the work that led to this amendment. There will also be a brief time for invited testimony on Thursday before we actually move the bill in work session. So let's say, Mr. Whitman, how much time do you think you need?
For the brief overview, Madam Chair, I think I can do that in about 4 minutes.
Ooh, good. And then I'd give the members of the task force 10, 12 minutes among you. Then we'll have questions. Okay. Mr. Whitman, take it away.
So, Madam Chair, first of all, just on behalf of the Governor's Office, I again want to thank the members of the task force for their work over a 2.5-year period, I believe, in putting this together. And I'm happy to be here with three of the members of the task force today looking at a product which really comes out of the hard work that they did in going all over the state. I don't even know how many meetings there were, but sort of lost track, but a lot of hours of volunteer effort on this task force. So with that, you should all have a one-page handout that looks something like this, that has on the top HB 2229 41309 concept provided to LC. So this is the summary of what became the Dash 7 amendments that you now have before you. There are 10 primary things to just touch on very briefly in terms of these amendments. The first is the set of overarching principles for our land use system in terms of what outcomes the land use system should be trying to achieve. There's language there to assure that those principles aren't used in legal battles in land use to try to block particular things. So that's the first piece. The second piece is what is commonly known as the rural lands piece of the Big Look recommendation. And essentially what that does is it provides a clear pathway for counties to fix mapping problems, particularly for rural lands generally, but particularly for farm and forest lands. It does have sideboards on it. It has sideboards that do two basic things. One, to assure that if lands are being rezoned to allow additional development, that the counties have to go through a process to determine whether those new uses would have an effect on significant natural resources, commonly known as the Goal 5 work. And then secondly, to assure that any new uses that are allowed are consistent with the carrying capacity of the land in terms of the intensity of use that's allowed. The third piece is revisions to the regional problem-solving process that we discussed in this committee, I think about 6 weeks ago, that sets up that clarifies essentially existing law and makes a number of process improvements to try to improve the attractiveness of working as a region on an ad hoc problem-by-problem basis on land use. This is not a mandate. This is a tool to encourage local governments to work together. I think that is benefited from the work of the committee, and you'll hear about that, I think, from a couple people. The fifth thing is existing provision of the a Big Look recommendation in terms of prioritization for investment in infrastructure. Important point here to note is that this does not override any existing federal, state, or local requirement in terms of how money is spent. So this is in addition to whatever provisions there already are for expenditure of those dollars. The sixth thing is a new provision. The task force did look at process improvements and specifically at ways to encourage mediation so we avoid winner-take-all outcomes in land use proceedings at both the local and state level. In the last session, the Legislative Assembly put hard time limits on when local governments have to make land use decisions. This would allow an out from those hard time limits if the applicant and the local government agree to up to a 90-day extension for the purpose of mediation. So the incentive was created by the hard limit that you put in 2 years ago, and then we provide an opportunity for mediation that allows the extension of that time. The seventh thing is the so-called audit of our state land use statutes, goals, and rules. This has been reworked a little bit to essentially provide that this is something the department should do in conjunction with the Oregon Law Commission as resources are available to do the work. So this sets up a long-term framework for this work to occur, probably over a number of biennia. The eighth thing is an authorization for transfer of development rights between jurisdictions. So the concept here is to take the limited development rights that exist on farm and forest lands and to some extent on lands that are protected for natural resources also, and move those development rights to places where they are more appropriately utilized. Emphasize here that those places would be within an existing urban growth boundary or within an area designated as an urban reserve, which is an area that will come into the urban growth boundary.
You're right.
The ninth thing is just a note that the original provisions in the Big Look legislation dealing with annexation and also dealing with state agency coordination and strategic planning have been dropped from the bill in these Dash 7 amendments for a variety of reasons, including fiscal and desire to do a little bit more work on some of those concepts. And then the 10th thing is just to note that this bill would have an emergency clause. So that's the very brief overview. Elements are, I think, well-grounded in the work that the task force did. It doesn't carry everything forward that the task force recommended, but I think you now want to hear from the task force about their reactions to where we are today.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would just note, the summary says that the transfer development rights concept is in the bill. I think it's actually in a separate amendment. Just for the committee's benefit, I think the TDR piece is in the Dash 8 amendment.
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, this is what happens when we do things very quickly. So that's my mistake. The transfer development rights piece is in a separate Dash 8 amendment. That's correct.
Thank you.
Which I believe Ms. Ross tells me is in your stack. It's in the packet.
It's 8. Yep.
Dash 8. Thank you. That gives the committee an opportunity to adopt the main amendment absent the TDR if we don't like the TDR piece. But we're going to love it. Commissioner Witte?
Thank you.
Co-chair?
Madam Chair and members, Nikki Witte, Coos County Commissioner, and I was the vice chair of the task force. I want to thank you for all your hours you put in on this bill. And I tried to follow along on the internet, but I missed big chunks of it. So I do want to compliment you on, I think you bettered our bill in a few areas. And one is in the regional problem solving, we tried to fix it so that it wouldn't take 8 years or nine like it did in Jackson County, and that if somebody didn't want to, that only those that would be bound would be the ones that signed the final agreement. But I think you added language that if a participant is going to change, then you need to make an argument for or against to the department. So that may safeguard a tiny community that feels like it's getting squeezed out. We had two or more counties had to work together on the mapping, and you changed it to one or more counties, and that's probably better, because toward the end we were trying to match up counties and thought that's probably not going to work too well. I appreciate that you left in our language about regional differences and respecting those. And the principles, we specifically didn't put any goals in the principles because we thought it might open the door to people wanting all of them in there and felt they should be separate. But I do appreciate your work, and Ken and Judy can add their comments.
Mr. Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. My name is Ken Bailey from the Dalles, and as a member of the task force, I appreciate the effort you've put in and inviting us to put our comments in once in a while of where we are. And from the language I've seen here, the general concepts of what the task force came up with, I think, are included here. There's a few things that were dropped, but those were issues that I think the task force was struggling with how to present and how they should be or not. And in fact, probably, especially the annexation one is a good example, is we really didn't know what to do with it. We really didn't want to discard it outright. Let's put it in there and see what you guys do with it. And you probably have done the proper thing and leaving it out. But that is a difficult issue. It has a lot of relating to land use issues. But I'm not sure there's a simple solution. It may be something that needs to be dealt with over time another way. And that's the way I think most of the concepts of the task force have been incorporated properly in here. And we've refined some, changed some a little bit because of a bit of change of political climate or economic climate since we put our 2 cents worth in. And we also knew that we are making recommendations to you. We had no authority to make final decisions. So we tried to set it up for you to be able to work better. And hopefully that's what we found to do. Overall, I see that this is probably more in line with our thought and our discussions than maybe we even expected from this group. That if we thought, you know, if half or two-thirds of what we do gets adopted, we'll be fine. And of course, it's not adopted yet. But I think the vast majority of what we do has been incorporated in here, and even the pieces that are either been dropped or set aside, I think the recognition of the importance of them has been there. It's just that now is not the right time to deal with that. Let's keep it on the table and deal with it down the road as we can. And I think we all appreciate how that works, and that's just the way it's going to be. That's the political process. Do what you can, and the economics is going to have a big piece of it. And some of the things that we would like to do, and I'm sure you'd like to do, we just can't do because of the current economic place we're all in. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mayor Hammerstedt.
Thank you. Judy Hammerstedt, past mayor of Lake Oswego, but I was mayor of Lake Oswego all during this very long process. And I want to extend my thanks to the committee chairman for doing such diligent work on this piece of legislation. I think that we all are a little surprised that you really hung in there this long, and that we're going to have a bill out on the floor, because there were many things that were very controversial about this whole process and about the recommendations that we made. We made more recommendations than we knew you could handle. A lot of it was wishful thinking. Certainly on my part, the annexation piece was wishful thinking, and it'll come back. As urban growth boundaries move, I think that there will be other opportunities for this body to address that, probably in the same way you addressed it this time. But I want to just say that I think the things that you did address, and the ways that you either postponed the audit piece, for example, we'd really like to see that done, but we realize that there are certainly fiscal constraints on what we can do. I don't think that that need is going to go away, and you all have the experience of going through this and recognizing that our wonderful, our beneficial land use planning program that lasted for 30 years wasn't necessarily the end-all and be-all, that we could improve upon it and that we could address issues that needed to be addressed. And I want to thank each and every one of you for your part in that. And I think that the committee is, as diverse as we were, stayed very neutral, and for the most part, you heard from everybody that had any kind of an opinion about this, and I think you've come up with a remarkable piece of legislation. So I hope it goes well, and thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you all. Questions for this panel? Oh, you don't get away quite so readily, Commissioner Witte. Maybe you do. Good. You did phenomenal work. You teed this up in a way that was very impressive. The diversity of ideas that you took in and synthesized for us was remarkable, and I really appreciate that you have given us something so good to work with. Thanks.
We did not put a sign-up sheet up, did we?
This is a work session. I do want to make sure we have an opportunity for a bit of public testimony before we move this amendment, because it's a non-trivial amendment.
At some point, Madam Chair, would you like the committee to discuss these amendments?
Yes, I do. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to have them to digest. So we could I'm planning on having that discussion on Thursday, okay. Representative. I think what I'll do is ask anyone who would like to submit written comments would be welcome, of course. Anyone who would like to provide verbal testimony on Thursday should contact the committee administrator, and we will manage the agenda on Thursday. So let Ms. Ross know by 3 o'clock tomorrow,
if possible,
if you would like to put comments on the verbal record on Thursday, and we'll just have to make some decisions about how much of the committee's time we can dedicate to this on Thursday.
And yes, Representative, I want to make sure we allow some time for committee members as well to weigh in and either make comments or if after you've read the amendment, actually two amendments. Or are there others that we should be aware of? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you interested in hearing a brief summary if I were to make such a motion to introduce an amendment?
Sure.
All right.
I'm not planning on moving either of the two amendments we've just described today, but you may make any motion you'd like.
Well, Madam Chair, what I would like to do is I would like the committee to have the same opportunity to review the amendment. If you prefer, I won't introduce it as a motion. I'd just like the opportunity for the dash 3 amendment to be distributed so that
That's
committee members
idea.
Have an opportunity to do that, and then Thursday when we are processing the bill, can you
do we have it here?
No, we're going to get it there right
please.
Now. And I mean, this is a very brief amendment. It basically in my opinion makes sure that those who petition the board for review of a land use decision are adversely affected. So it just changes the language from currently a person may petition the board for review of a land use decision if the person and goes on to a person and then the new language adversely affected by a land use decision or limited land use decision. So it makes sure that those who are filing claim are actually adversely affected by that claim.
Okay. So we then have three amendments that are actively under consideration. That's not the... Oh, maybe more.
Just,
Representative Winger?
Just one more. And it's not one the committee's not unfamiliar with. Going back to our original discussions, they are the dash... five amendments. I actually do have stacks of them for distribution if they need to be handed out. This just goes back again to what some may consider a trivial point of in these, but that I think is critical as a statement. I realize that this list at the beginning of the sort of conclusions that the task force has made about the overarching goals, the findings, not the findings, but the goals, principles. Thank you. I continue to believe that D, I see we've added E, I continue to believe that D can be improved and that there needs to be a line here that deals with the issue of property owners and how they are treated in the process of trying to reach all the other goals that we want the land use system to do. And the amendment... essentially changed it from provide fairness and equity to all Oregonians to provide fairness to Oregon landowners. And I'm certainly open to alternative wording, but I still believe that it's important for a line along those sentiments to be in the principles. I'm not sure that the line as it currently exists really means anything.
Okay. Let's plan on having some discussion on this bill, and we've got several amendments to consider on Thursday. Committee members, please be advised, absent any kerfuffles, it would be the chair's intention that the bill move on Thursday to wherever it goes from here, and we'll see whether that is Ways and Means or the floor. So, fair warned. Let's close that work session. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3099. Committee members, again, in the interest of giving people an opportunity to have time to review things, we're going to discuss work that has gone on this bill. And post 22-29 for Thursday. Before we do that,
reopen the work session on House Bill 2229 for the purpose of carrying that bill over to Thursday's agenda. Carry the work session on House Bill 2229 over to Thursday's agenda. Now, go back and reopen the work session on House Bill 3099. I want an opportunity to identify work that has happened on amendments. Do we have those amendments?
We don't have those either.
We don't have the amendment yet, but we have a spreadsheet that I would like people to have an opportunity to look at. I would like, Senator Morris was here earlier on this bill, and he asked if we were going to move that bill today, and I told him it was not my intention for that bill to move today, and since the amendment isn't here, that's probably the likely outcome. But Senator Morris did have some testimony that he wanted people to be aware of, and so I'll ask the committee assistant to pass out Senator Morris's letter, and we'll advise him that if he would like to testify, give invited testimony on Thursday, we would be happy to have him on the bill. Representative Clem, you've been kind of working this. Would you like to give any introductory comments, or should I just ask Mr. Whitman to switch gears and come and talk about a new bill?
On 3099? You could probably just start with Director Whitman. The only thing I'll say is the work group meeting, Representative Esquivel couldn't attend, so I also didn't attend in order to have a little symmetry there. And so I couldn't completely describe what went on there, but there was some progress made and some areas where there was not progress made. And I think that's probably what this matrix will reflect in future conversations. But some was made, I understand.
Okay. Perhaps more than usual with the absence of legislators. Mr. Whitman, do you want to walk us through this matrix or no? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Sorry. I should have gotten my script better.
Madam Chair, we've been involved in this a bit, but we really haven't taken a vote on this bill, so I think it would be more appropriate to ask someone else to walk through.
I'm looking for...
I think I could probably...
Okay, Representative Clement, back to you.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I know on the dog kennel issue, we talked about that day that it was misdrafted and appeared to be a horrible malice against greyhounds only as the one breed that couldn't be kenneled out, and this fixes that and makes it clear that greyhounds are not to be discriminated against, and so this amendment allows greyhound kennels and other dog kennels to continue to remain on EFU. The amendment was trying to get at another part that had to do with a racing track that has never been built, and it frustrates folks to have it still in the statute when it never was built, and it was only in Multnomah County, if you remember, in the statute. And so, and I think we get at that with this amendment. The Living Use History Museum, I believe we have some language that will work well. It has to do with sort of allowing existing structures that have been part of the history of these areas to have usage as a living history museum. Aggregate Mines, you'll see on the spreadsheet, says no change from House Bill 3099. I believe there's ongoing conversations, though, about that. The definition of agricultural land, this has to do with essentially the process around resource versus non-resource land, and making it clear that the long-standing process that the department uses is still remains in effect. I don't know about this permeable road surface one, and this... deletion of the solid waste facilities permitted by DEQ. There was a technical error, it looks like, but I know the issue is that the DEQ had a super siting authority on land disposal and that they've never used and don't intend to use. And so the goal of the bill and the work group, but it was not written that way, so it has to be fixed, and that's what the amendment would do, is to make it clear that the DEQ cannot supersite a landfill, and again, they haven't actually used that. So that was the intention. It looks to me, when I look in the amendment column, like it says return to current law, and so I'm unclear if that means that we're not going to remove the supersiting authority, or whether or not we are fixing the way it was written, which was incorrect. To be clear, it was only to be about removing the supersite authority, but not about their general authority to do landfills.
I'm seeing a lot of activity going on in the back of the room, and I'm wondering if Ms. Kimball and Mr. Johnson would be willing to enlighten us.
That's a good call.
No, that's fine.
For the record, I'm Kate Kimball on behalf of 1,000 Friends of Oregon.
And I'm Jim Johnson, land use and water plant coordinator with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I would say this is the first time I've seen this, so I can guess what I think's going on here. But from what the discussions have been, it's most of this is pretty obvious. Chair Nolan, on the first element there, there's actually two provisions in state law that deal with the siting of solid waste facilities. One is the so-called supersiting provision that Representative Clem talked about. Another is a conditional use authority that counties have to go through and cite those. When this says returns to current law, it's talking about the conditional use permit authority that's in law would be provided in both the marginal lands counties and the rest of the state. The supersiding authority, which was in the law, would be removed, and I believe that's what this is getting at. The original draft removed the conditional use process in one set of counties and not in the other set, and it was never intended to be that way. So it puts the conditional use process back across the board statewide for all counties. So that was the technical fix there. The Greyhound Kennel...
Mr. Johnson, I'm sorry.
Sure.
That technical fix, does that actually change current law then?
No. The technical fix would leave current law as it is. 3099 changes current law regarding solid waste disposal facilities only regarding those facilities ordered to be sited by the Environmental Quality Commission on EFU lands. The supersiting language that Representative Clem was speaking about, that, to my knowledge, that authority has never been used.
So maybe we could ask it this way. With the efforts that you two, and actually, I'd like to ask Ms. Abbott to come up because I know she participated in a lot of this as well, from my office. What would be helpful is to understand, and from my perspective, the fourth section there, the fourth row there on aggregate mines is still under active review. So let's leave that aside for the moment.
That's a good.
Then, if we move forward with the amendment as envisioned by the people who've been working on it, what would change from current law?
Chair Nolan, how I understand it, based on this and what was in the original bill, and I'm going to have to remember. So we've talked about the solid waste disposal, and it's basically the so-called supersiding authorities of DEQ versus the conditional use standards. The conditional use standards remain, so solid waste facilities could still be sited in an exclusive farm use zone, subject to local review. The DEQ authority would be removed. And that was the supersiding thing that basically said if the EQC ordered it, then it was allowed in an exclusive farm use zone, period. So that's what that change would do there. The the second one there, the dog kennels, there was a provision in the original bill that basically removed greyhound racing as a use that may be permitted in exclusive farm use zone because it was specific to one greyhound park that no longer exists in Multnomah County, and that would be removed. But then there was a technical change made that basically referred to greyhound kennels again when it was discussing kennels. And there's no reason to talk about kennels and greyhound kennels twice, and so it's really and Ms. Kimball may have a better approach to this. I didn't work on this issue much, but it really is just fixing that. It referred to greyhounds twice when there was no need.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, to clarify, the technical problem was the greyhound racing was eliminated, as Mr. Johnson said. Then when it came to dog kennels, it said you could have a dog kennel but not a greyhound dog kennel, which seemed odd. So the amendments would say you can have a dog kennel on EFU regardless of the breed.
Right.
Okay.
As long as it's not a puppy farm.
Okay. Anything else? Ms. Abbott?
That's what it said. Yeah. Other
Chair, than Amy Abbott, for the record. So odd being on this side of the dais. I think probably the most important thing that we came up with was pretty much a consensus on all of it, with the exception of aggregate, which you indicated we are continuing to work on. And I think there's some promise there. And other things that we didn't discuss was adding the living museums piece back in, which was originally deleted in 3099. We did make some small adjustments to the language to tighten up the use. One is important to note is no new structures. Okay. They must be existing structures. And we also removed the language regarding parks being excluded from exclusive farm use. So public and private parks would be allowed back in. And the definition of agriculture land, which I think is very important to note, that in the past, whether your farm was profitable was a criteria used in determining whether your farm was a farm. So if your farm didn't make a profit, somehow you were no longer a farm. So like if a restaurant doesn't make a profit, you're no longer a restaurant, which of course is not the case.
It's actually true because they disappear.
Yes. I stand semi-corrected. Yeah. Okay. And finally, the new change is the permeable surfaces, which means that we want to discourage, with the exception of the public roads, that if we're going to be putting roadways in, that we use alternatives, you know, grass. If we're going to have extra parking, that we find a way to maybe do it on grassland or a gravel parking lot versus paving over exclusive farm use.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for each of you, but you spoke to the non-permeable surfaces. Where did this idea come from? I mean, it seems to me, especially on some of the largest farms, where they use as access roads, private roads, just environmentally, dust, all the traffic created by large farm equipment moving, hopefully at a quick pace, driving commerce, that telling them they can't pave or use a non-permeable surface. Did they request that?
Madam Chair, committee, for the record, again, Amy Abbott with Representative Nolan's office. This has been in discussion by multiple groups. It comes sort of back and forth over time. And I believe that there is sufficient room, working room, where there would be areas where if there was an exception needed that you could get it.
Matt. We're going to need to see actual language, but yes,
right.
Kimball.
Kate Kimball with 1,000 Friends. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Hanna, one clarification is that your example with a farmer, if a paved road is needed to avoid dust problems, that would be allowed under this amendment, that it excludes public health and safety issues. And for dust and particulate matter, that kind of exception would be allowed.
Representative.
Thank you. And I won't belabor this point, but it just brings up, so to the benefit of public health and safety, it would be allowed. What if it's just better for their equipment and more profitable to have a solid surface instead of getting stuck in the mud, they're able to run up and down a paved road?
Kate Kimball, again, Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, members of the committee. I think the answer would be that we also need to look at the benefits of having permeable surfaces, that there's more runoff created and other issues, so that we have benefits also from the permeable. I think that this, with the public health and safety exemption, I would imagine on a private road, it will be the eyes of the beholder primarily to adjust to the needs of that use. I don't see this as being a major enforcement issue in the future.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm going back to your question, at least the way I heard it. I am struggling to, we don't have the amendments, but I'm struggling here with what the amendments will probably say, and then there are still some coming, and we need clarity. And when we get all this information put together, I think it would be helpful to me to get a summary of what the bill in its proposed amended form does.
Good idea. Yeah.
It seems like we're making exceptions to a lot of the things that were going to be not permitted, and then we need to see in the end whether we have a piece of work that's frankly worth moving forward if there isn't significant change or worth discussing, I think.
Representative Clem.
I'd like to agree with my colleague. Having worked 60 to 70 hours on this bill, new entries at this point, like this permeable road surfing, is probably not going to get my support. Not that I, want to pave one of our, Ken wouldn't like it. We share a boundary. He probably doesn't want me paving the dirt road any more than I want him doing it. But, it's one of these things that hasn't been talked about until now. I don't know that I've got the time or attention to think about it. But, get the amendments and see. To me, and the process of this bill's journey here was spending time going through the statute and figuring out what things aren't even used anymore, what things never were used, what things possibly... you could put some new parameters around what things you could put different tests on to see if they're appropriate. And I think there's a tremendous amount of value in both having done that, to for me at least, to understand and learn the land use law, but in the end, having a statute that's cleaner. But having said that, there's probably only three or four of these that I think are going to be easily explainable and have everybody on board. So at a bare minimum, I'd like to move those three or four. My poor staff person who spent all summer in this work group would love to at least see one of them moved. I don't even know which one, but at least one. And I have a lot of sympathy for your efforts to try and understand what in the world this is, and we will try and make it really easy on the committee and pull it back to the ones where it's understandable and we have a pretty good amount of knowledge and consensus around them.
I'd appreciate that. That would be great. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, I am going to carry the work session on House Bill 3099 over to Thursday's agenda as well. And close that work session. We have one more on our agenda. Open a work session on House Bill 3225. Colleagues, this is a bill that addresses issues around Measure 49 claims. And we are trying to parallel work that goes on in the Senate, but because I'm now not convinced that we will get an opportunity to work Senate Bill 945, I think it will be smart for us to move forward with our own version of a bill. One of the reasons we may not get Senate Bill 945 is because
The rumor is that that bill may be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by the Senate, because in that form it has a general fund impact, and we've been trying to work around how to deal with that. That's okay. And Mr. Honeycutt had a suggestion. Mr. Honeycutt? We can't, Mr. Stacy's not here to waltz down the aisle with you today, but perhaps Ms. Kimball would.
Oh. They didn't skip anyway.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action. We would very much hate to see this bill die in Ways and Means for lack of funding. It's a good bill, helps a lot of people. So I would suggest one of the things that we've considered is to ask the claimants, the folks who are getting relief under this bill who would otherwise not get relief, to pay an application fee to the department in order to get that relief. Right now, the amount of the fee that we think is adequate is $175. That should, I believe, raise enough revenue to keep, hopefully, to keep this bill out of the Ways and Means Committee so it can move forward. And I can tell you now that, as I've said before, on some of these issues where folks are being benefited from this bill, we are currently litigating these issues. There are some of the categories that I think are covered under Measure 49 where we have a disagreement with the department, and we're filing lawsuits. And for every claimant that we file a lawsuit to challenge, it's a $189 filing fee. So the $175 is less than the filing fee that they'd pay to whatever the county circuit court is to challenge the application. So I would suspect, since it's voluntary, I would suspect that most folks who find themselves out of the loop that are now coming in under this bill would be more than happy to pay the $175 to get back into the Measure 49 process. So that's our suggestion.
Mr. Honeycutt,
and I've never asked for a fee or anything ever. And so, but this, there's always a first.
No, I appreciate it, and particularly given the other expense that many of these claimants might have, it actually made sense when you mentioned it to me.
Yeah.
Colleagues, it's my understanding that if we were to accept that amendment and the bill passed with that, there would still be some general fund cost to process these claims. And candidly, I think that's appropriate, because I think the general public should be invested in providing this access, and that it should not be borne entirely by the claimants. But I think it's responsible to find a way to share that cost. So I would intend to have that amendment drafted, and hopefully we'll get a chance to hear that amendment on Thursday.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wingart.
This fee has me very conflicted, much like my friend from Oregonians in Action. I would say this. I think we're dealing with a group of people who've been waiting a long time for relief, justice, pick your word. And I'm sure that they probably, the vast majority of them, will be prepared to pay this fee for some closure on this subject. But I share Representative Cowan's concern about the deadline that LCDC has itself put forward of June of next year. And I think that an appropriate balance to the fee would be some guarantee for these applicants that they will get what they're paying for, which is that deadline will be met. And I would suggest, as a start to the conversation, that applications that are not processed by that deadline are considered approved, or some variation of that, so that we have more than just LCDC's promise of reaching that deadline, that they actually have their own incentive to bring these applications to a close. And I think that that's an appropriate request to make in exchange for the fee that they're being asked to put up at this point after a very long wait for this fast track that has still, or express lane, that has still not been delivered for them.
Thank you. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is the bill, the one bill that I really would like to see worked in this committee. And it is my understanding that there are still some other amendments processing that, honestly, I believe could streamline some of the department's work and perhaps offset some cost.
Yeah.
Before we start adding additional claimants in here, my primary goal is to speed the process for those that are already in line as much as possible. So I just want to say I would like to see us do everything we can to keep this bill alive and working and try to process some relief through.
And Representative, you've mentioned a couple of specific ways to help that, and I know that the department has talked with me about that. Particularly taking advantage of existing record that's been developed.
Thank
you. So, yes, thank you for coming up with those ideas. That's the advantage of having a former county commissioner joining the discussion.
Well, hopefully we will see those amendments in a timely manner. If not, we need to do something. If,
yes.
If the Senate bill isn't going to come to us to keep this yeah. moving.
Representative Clem.
If, I just want to ask this question. If I recall right, somewhere there was a discussion of actually placing in a bill, or maybe in this bill, a statutory deadline of June 10th. So it was actually in the statute. And then I think a verbal comment was made was, you know, that obviously then has to do with ways and means funding, but at present levels, statutory deadline would go in. And I think that's a response to what Representative Winger was looking for. I can assure you, being on ways and means, if we can keep this out of there and have the statutory deadline part in, these folks will get relief quicker because we have a lot of budgets and we're going a long ways through. We're not even hearing bills for quite some time. And this could be easily signed into law with a fee and still have the statutory provision in here about the June 10th deadline, which I think is what you're asking for.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
My question would simply be, what does the statutory requirement of the deadline mean? I mean, how is that enforced? What happened? Just for the sake of argument, the point we put, the reason we put the deadline is so they finish. So assume that they don't, and we have it in statute that they were supposed to. What is the consequence? What happens then? I'm still looking for some assurance that folks are paying this fee, and there's you know they were already guaranteed an express lane. Now we're asking them to pay a fee to get the express lane, and which okay, but what are we going to give them in return for the $175 that we're now asking them to kick in addition?
Representative, the property owners that would be subject to this bill currently have no rights under the law to file their claims. You may argue with whether that's appropriate, but it is the way things are under the law. So they don't have access now to the express lane or any other Measure 49 relief. My understanding of the idea of a fee would be because this would be adding to the workload of the members of the department and a partial offset. What this bill intends to do for those property owners is to give them an opportunity to make their claim. We have made no guarantees to the people who are already in the queue that they have an automatic right to have their claim upheld. To give an automatic right to anyone that no matter whether there's any substance to their claim or not, it's automatically approved if we miss a deadline. Something we can discuss, but
well, Madam Chair, point taken about who pays the fee, but I think that my concern is not just about those folks who be coming into the process, but those that are already in. And I understand the concern about having automatic approval,
my assumption is there will be no automatic approval because the department has said that it will meet the deadline of processing the claims.
Right.
So my point in suggesting this is not to create some nefarious or backdoor way for people to get approval. It is simply because all people work best under deadlines, and that if the department is telling us the truth, and I have no reason to doubt the department is not telling us the truth, then what would be the objection to having some consequence in there so that we're all assured that we're working towards a deadline with all due speed?
Madam Chair.
Understood your point. Okay. Just for clarity, it is my understanding from a conversation we had that gave me a hint about what Mr. Honeycutt might recommend, that we would be talking only about a fee for claims filed under this bill. Anyone who's currently got a claim in, it's not a retroactive fee on them. Just for new claimants whose eligibility is newly created under this bill. Just
Understood.
To clarify that.
Understood.
Representative Clem?
You know, I think it can be taken offline. It's just a you know, my goal again is to expedite this, and I'm concerned about anything that infringes on the hydraulics that we go through in Ways and Means might mean a trip to Ways and Means, and I think these folks need to avoid a trip to Ways and Means and get straight to the House floor. So that's all. I'll just reiterate that over and over again.
I'm working hard toward that objective.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hammond.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for being pulled away a few times. I don't believe you've had the discussion about the potential extension under this bill for those outside of the 7 days yet.
No.
Do you...
And I'm also not planning on moving the bill today.
Okay. You know, we took testimony from folks who talked about that. We also, offline, have had discussions of those, of the implications of adding to those. I think I said at the time, but I want to reiterate, I think there is some merit to the discussion of what that period would look like and how far out one might extend. And under that extension, some rules that might say, for instance, that they go to the end of the queue. In other words, they're at the end of the line, and they don't qualify under the hardship portion. But I would hope we'll have that discussion.
Okay. Yep. Yes, Representative. But just like deadlines are helpful, and I agree with you, Representative Wingert, it's why we have been working so hard today, because we have a deadline next Tuesday.
Yeah.
I also personally think that bright lines are helpful. We can debate where that bright line ought to be, but ultimately I think it needs to be a bright line that we can all defend, at least understand the rationale behind. Because if it's a gray line or a squishy line, it creates problems for the staff who has to implement it. It creates problems for people who then have to be anxious about which side of the line they're on. So. Okay. Yes, Nate. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Were you able to ask the director?
I have not yet had that conversation.
Thank
We've
you.
Been scurrying around with amendments on other bills.
We'll hold that.
While we are in work session, I will note for the record that we received written testimony on this bill from Andrew H. Stamp. We will carry this bill over to our Thursday agenda as well. Close that work session. Any other further issues for the committee?
We do have.
Please be advised that because we have a deadline approaching, we have this room available to us for 3 hours on Thursday. Can you imagine anything more fun?
Yeah,
so be prepared, if you could, to work until 6 o'clock Thursday if we need to.
Madam Chair, I believe another of my committees has chosen Thursday evening for a meeting, and I don't know if we have
okay.
a time. I have no idea what time it starts
right.
at this moment.
Chair that committee, Representative.
Oh.
What about me? Just shoot myself.
All right. So we will...
I'm hoping, Madam Chair, that we could have that offline conversation quickly with Dave, with Thousand Friends, and with the director.
Okay.
Just real quick.
Good. See you all Thursday. We're adjourned.